The Good Christian, or Sermons on the Chief Christian Virtues by Father Francis Hunault, translated from the original German edition of Cologne, 1740, by Father J. Allen, Imprimatur Bishop James T. Ricard, copyright 1891. On Consolation in Adversity, preached on the third Sunday after Easter, Your Sorrow Shall Be Turned into Joy, St. John 16:20. Introduction. Hard words these, you shall lament and weep, my dear disciples, my faithful servants, but at the same time, how great the consolation, your sorrow shall be turned into joy. Therefore, be not disturbed, nor frightened at the thought of the sorrow. Hear this, pious Christians, who now live in trials and adversity, resigned to the will of God. Be comforted. Your sorrow shall be turned into joy. Hear this, pious Christians, who now mortify your senses by voluntary penances and austerities. Only continue as you have begun. Your severity towards yourselves, your present sufferings, shall be turned into joy. Yes, you say to yourselves, such we hope will be the case in the next life, in the glorious resurrection, as we have heard already, but that is still a long way off, and we must have a good deal of patience till it comes. What? How can you speak like that? Do you not know that it is only a little while compared with eternity? Yet if that little while seems too long to you, then I say to you, not only shall your sorrow be turned into the eternal joys of the next life, but also in this life you shall have joy in return for your sorrow, as I now proceed to prove. Plan of Discourse, Passions and Adversity, Penance and Mortification of the Senses, bring joy to the servant of God in this life, such is the whole subject. They bring a supernatural joy, as we shall see in the first part, a natural joy, as we shall see in the second part. Let us, then, joyfully bear the cross, either through necessity or by our own free will. Help us all to do this, O dear Savior, by thy grace, which we beg of thee through the intercession of Mary and of the holy angels. What? Shall we look for delights in trials, penance, in mortification, for comfort in austerities, for pleasure in the midst of sharp thorns, for joy in the cross and suffering, for mirth and sadness? How can such things harmonize? Wet and dry, warm and cold, white and black, are not more opposed to each other than joy and sorrow, depriving oneself violently of joy, and yet finding pleasure therein? That is true, my dear brethren, as far as the words go and in outward appearance. Yet, these latter things can exist together. They must, in fact, exist together, or else the apostles of Christ would exhort us in vain and urge us to do an impossible thing, as often as they impress on us the necessity of rejoicing in the midst of suffering. St. James writes in his epistle, "My brethren, count it all joy." Yes, nothing else but joy. What? When everything goes according to your natural wishes and inclinations? No, but when you shall fall into diverse temptations, when you are sunk in a sea of troubles and have all sorts of trials to sustain, then your joy should be at its height. St. Peter, the chief of the apostles, gives a similar lesson. If you partake of the sufferings of Christ, rejoice. O glorious St. Paul, if those things could not harmonize, you would have been guilty of mere hypocrisy in saying out so frequently before the world, I please myself in my infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distress, who now rejoice in my sufferings. Nay, he even ventures to say, I am filled with comfort, I exceedingly abound with joy in all our tribulations. Paul, says St. Chrysostom, was as joyful in his sufferings as if he were in a paradise of delights And although he had the great happiness of being wrapped up into the third heaven and of seeing the blessed the elect, yet he never rejoiced at that, but only in the trials he had to bear, on which he congratulated himself, and that too in such an extent that in the midst of his labors and difficulties he chastised his body with all sorts of penitential exercises in order to increase his joy. If these things cannot harmonize, then I do not understand how the martyrs of Christ were able to laugh and sing so joyfully in the midst of the most cruel torments, nor how so many other saints, and even tender women, longed so earnestly for the cross, and were not satisfied till it was given them. Nay, if the cross laid upon them seemed insufficient, they tortured themselves with iron chains, hair shirts, rods, and scourges, nor would they have changed those penances for any worldly delights. Ask a St. Teresa, a St. Catherine of Siena, a St. Mary Magdalene of Pazzi, if she is tired of her cross, and you will hear how Teresa preferred to die rather than be without suffering. Let me, O Lord, she used to pray, either suffer or die. You will see Catherine holding the crown of thorns with both hands and refusing to change it for any earthly crown. You will hear Magdalene expressing the wish to live longer, solely for the purpose of being able to bear the cross longer. Ask St. Ignatius, and he will tell you that there are not chains and fetters enough in all Spain to satisfy his longing for suffering. Ask St. Francis Xavier, and you will hear him crying out in the midst of his troubles, "Still more, O God, still more," as if he could not be satisfied with trials. Those holy servants of God would surely not have been in such dispositions if they had not found pleasure and joy in the cross. True indeed are the words of St. Paul, paraphrased by St. Bernard, "The sufferings of this time are not worthy to be compared with the present grace of consolation that is given on account of them. Even if there were no hope of a future reward, still we should choose suffering in order to taste true joy and consolation in the present life." And in what does this wonderful joy consist, which is hidden in sharp and bitter sufferings? Vain children and lovers of the world, I must not address this question to you. You would not understand it. Let them alone. They are blind, I might well say in the words of our dear Lord. They measure joys by the outward senses, and when you speak of pleasure to them, their thoughts at once revert to carnal delights which are common to men with the brute creation. Oh, woe to us poor mortals, if we had nothing more than that to expect for bearing crosses and trials. Far greater and more excellent are the true joys which inwardly delight the mind and the soul, a single drop of which gives us more sweetness than all the vain joys of the world, and of which no one knows anything but he who has tasted them, as St. John says in the Apocalypse. To him that overcometh, to him that conquers himself, I will give the hidden manna, which no man knoweth, but he that receiveth it, that is to say, the God of infinite generosity, will give to his faithful servants who mortify themselves for his sake, or are otherwise tormented by trials, a reward in this life. He will not defer it altogether to the next world, but in the midst of their labors he will bestow on them the hundredfold that he has promised. And while they are actually suffering, he allows them to taste beforehand the joys of heaven by the inward consolation of the heart and sweetness that he sends them. What, then, is that consolation and joy? I ask you, holy servant of God, you voluntarily renounce all the pleasures of the world, even those you might lawfully enjoy, and who bear your crosses and trials with such sweetness. Ah, why do you ask us? They exclaim, how can suffering be anything but a pleasure to the soul that loves God when it is his will for it to suffer? How can it be anything else but a consolation to to be able thus to pay off the debts contracted with the divine justice by former sins. Must it not be a comfort to withdraw one's heart from the transitory, short, deceitful, and disquieting joys of the world, and to fix it on the true joys of heaven? Must it not give pleasure to have a sure pledge of salvation and of eternal glory? Is it not consoling to be able to defy the devil and put into shame, by patience and mortification, to enter into the society of the martyrs and dear friends of God, who by their sufferings furthered his glory? To attract the attention of all the angels and elect in heaven? To have God in one's heart and to find him there, since he has promised to be with those who are in affliction? To have a share in the sufferings of Jesus Christ and to become like to him by patiently bearing the cross? To prove one's love for Christ not merely with words, but by deeds, since we carry the cross after him and are determined to carry it until death? Is not a mother more rejoiced to deprive herself of food or drink, to remain awake all night and submit to many other inconveniences for the sake of her child? And if the child dies, how she weeps and laments and complains that her only joy is taken from her, although in reality she is thus relieved from many worries and troubles? And would she not willingly undergo any labor if she could only thereby preserve her dear child's life? Does not a lover think it the greatest happiness to be able to please the object of his affection, no matter at what cost to himself? And must pious souls find less consolation and sweetness in the love of Jesus Christ, our eternal God, whom we not only please in the highest degree, but also accompany in suffering when we bear the cross and mortify ourselves? It is sweet and honorable to die for one's country, sang the poet of old. How much sweeter and more pleasant must it not be to suffer wounds for Christ? This was a thought that animated St. Procopius to suffer bravely for Christ. After having borne with the most fortitude all that the most savage cruelty could inflict on him, he thus addresses the judge. You think you will be able to conquer me by the torment you inflict on me and make me prove unfaithful to Jesus? But you do not reflect that you are in reality conferring on me the greatest benefit that any man in the world could bestow on me. Nay, the tortures you caused me to suffer place me under an obligation of the highest gratitude to you. For what can be more pleasing to one who loves Christ than to suffer? My only concern is that you should find out what joy my martyrdom causes me, and that you should wish to deprive me of it by ceasing to torture me. St. Bernard, I believe you. Repeat what you said before. The sufferings of this time are not worthy to be compared with the present grace of consolation that is given on account of them. And to speak with truth of the matter, can there be a greater consolation for a reasoning being than that which he finds in God, his Creator? Everything seeks and finds its rest and pleasure in that to which it has a natural inclination. This we see even in senseless and lifeless things. Throw a ball into the air, says St. Augustine, and as soon as the force that has impelled it is exhausted, it sinks back again and does not find rest until it is on its appropriate element, the earth. And if you were to dig away the ground from under it, it would follow you until it reached the center. The magnet has received from the author of nature such an attraction towards the north, that if you rub a needle on it, the latter will constantly turn to the north also. Turn it round and round as you will, now in this way, now in that, it will not rest and will continue to agitate itself as if it had life, until it again looks toward the north, its center and point of rest. Then, and then only, it remains quiet, still, and immovable. Now, continues St. Augustine, there is not amongst all created things a more powerful impulse and inclination than that which urges the heart of man to God, in order to be united with him and to rejoice in him. Thou hast made us, O Lord, for thyself, and our heart is uneasy until it rests in Thee. Seek out, O sensual, luxurious man, whatever there is on earth to delight your eyes, to charm your ears, to tickle your palate, to gratify your senses, to delight your flesh. Find out all that can be a source of pleasure to you, and having found it, pile it up in a heap, and then tell me honestly whether you are truly contented and satisfied. You must acknowledge that you have grasped at nothing but empty air and deceitful vanity, as the prophet says, O ye sons of men, why do you love vanity and seek after lying? You will be just as uneasy as before, and will have to seek after some new pleasure. Nor is that any wonder, for amongst all things that the world can offer you, there is nothing for which you are created. One thing is still wanting to you. All that is outside of God is far too mean and worthless to fill and satisfy the human heart, which is capable of possessing an immense, infinite good. Nay, continues St. Augustine, God himself, great and mighty as he is, cannot completely satisfy and content me by created joys, unless he gives me himself with them. Let him make me Lord and Master over heaven and earth, to do with him as I please. Let him place under my dominion all the hosts of heaven, and give me all the sensual joys of the whole world. All this cannot bring me perfect consolation, joy, rest, or happiness. I know that there is a creator of all these things. After him do I hunger and thirst. To him do I cry out. What have I in heaven? And besides thee, what do I desire upon earth? What can I wish for but thee alone, O my God, who art my last end, and who art alone that most perfect good that can satisfy me? So far, St. Augustine. From this it is clear that man can find no greater joy, no more perfect consolation, than in and with his God. Truly, says St. Bernard, that only is solid joy which comes from the Creator and not from the creature. Compared with that, all inner joy is sorrow, all sweetness pain, all delight is bitter, and all that can give pleasure is burdensome. And this is the consolation, this the joy, and to which the sorrow of the just shall be turned even in the present life. This is what the good God, whose yoke is sweet and his burden is light, so abundantly bestows on those souls who for his sake either bear the crosses he sends them with patience, or else chastise themselves with voluntary penances. And this gift will be all the greater, the less consolation they have and seek from creatures and from the senses, as he himself has promised so often. If they have a share in my cross, he says by the prophet Jeremiah, I will turn their mourning into joy, and will comfort them, and make them joyful after their sorrow. And my people shall be filled with my good things, saith the Lord. Just as a mother, when she finds her child submitting willingly to punishment, gives it milk and sugar to assuage the pain, and wipes away its tears with loving caresses. In the book of Deuteronomy, he says, they shall suck as milk the abundance of the sea. But is not the sea water bitter and salt? And on the other hand, what can be sweeter than milk? True, the water in itself is bitter. The cross that my just servants bear with patience, their voluntary mortifications and self-denial, are in themselves painful. But I will mix this water with sweetness, so that they will drink it down like milk, and will find it just as pleasing to the taste. They shall suck as milk the abundance of the sea. That seems miraculous to those who know nothing of divine consolations, but it is a miracle that God can easily work in pious, faithful souls. He will work it. He does actually work it, as we have seen in the examples of the saints. And such is still the experience of those who, for God's sake, mortify themselves and say with determined will, Lord, thy will be done. I accept this from thy divine hand. I will bear it and be satisfied with it, because so it is pleasing to thee. If I could seek for proofs in this town of Treves, I am sure that I should find many who are a thousand times more cheerful in their poverty than the rich are in possession of their wealth and treasures. Many who are a thousand times more satisfied in their mean and lowly condition than great lords are in their high dignities. Many who have incomparably more pleasure in the observance of chastity and in bodily austerities than others find in sensual enjoyments. Many who thank God for having deprived them of earthly joys, and even envy others who have more to suffer than they have. I have known many an instance of this, and have been acquainted with numbers who found that consolation in suffering. Nor can it be otherwise. The words of God cannot deceive, and he has expressly promised that they who for his sake renounce temporal consolation shall receive 100-fold more than they have given up. It must be so, for that only is solid joy which comes from the Creator and not from creatures, which is not begged of the outward senses, but sought in the center of the resting place of our heart. What I have said up to this has been addressed only to those who know by experience what it is to rejoice in God and to have heavenly consolation. To the sensual children of the world, such things are but castles in the air, and they are as little capable of forming an opinion of supernatural joy as a blind man is of pronouncing on the merits of a fine picture of which he cannot make the least image in his mind. Now, to explain my subject still better, I will speak of it in a natural way, and will show that in reality, patience under the cross and mortification voluntarily practiced for the love of God are the cause of joy to us in this life, even as far as natural joy is concerned. This is briefly the second part. In what does a joyful, happy life consist? Is it not in the inward peace, joy, and contentment of mind, as I have proved more in detail when speaking of conformity with the will of God? Such is the description that even heathen philosophers give of it, and we all know by experience that it is a true one. I may give my outward senses all the delights they are capable of enjoying, but how will that help me to a happy life if I am at war with myself inwardly, if my mind is disturbed and disquieted? If, on the other hand, my body is filled with pains and aches, or has to contend with hard work and discomfort, what harm will that do me, or how can it trouble me, if I suffer willingly and am contented and peaceful in the midst of my trials? Now let me take two individuals and compare them with each other. The one is a sensual, luxurious, unmortified man who abhors all crosses and flies trials and discomfort. In all things he seeks to gratify himself and allows all freedom to eyes, ears, taste, touch, and the other senses. He permits his desires and inclinations to rule him and govern him as they will, and has not the least idea of denying himself in anything. The other is one who is patient in adversity, accustomed to trials, and given to mortification and self-denial. He keeps a check on his outward senses and the desires of the flesh, and often does violence to them. Which of these two enjoys the greater peace, pleasure, and contentment of mind? They are at peace with themselves, says St. Augustine, who subject their inordinate appetites to reason and overcome and hold in check their carnal desires. This is the peace which is given on earth to men of goodwill. On the other hand, where do all the mental troubles and disturbances and disquiet us so much come from? Is it not from the inordinate desires that we allow to rule over us and do not try to master? Hence it is evident that the latter of the two lives in greater peace and quiet than the former. Let us see whether this is so in practice. The voluptuary is attacked, for instance, by fever, a Carthage, a toothache, or a headache. Oh, what a state he gets into! How he murmurs and complains, and weeps and sighs, and what a commotion he causes in the house, as if the last day were at hand. The other takes no notice of such a little thing. He bears it with patience, and remains calm and satisfied. Lord, he says, may thy holy will be done. Since no man can avoid inconveniences caused by the change of weather, the first is disturbed and quite put out by cold wind, the damp air, cold heat, walking or standing for a quarter of an hour, the prick of a needle, a spark falling on the hand. It seems as if he ought to be carried about in a litter between two woolen mattresses. The other, although he feels the inconveniences, is not disturbed by it. He is anxious to mortify himself, and here he has the desired opportunity, so that, having found what he sought, he is satisfied. Since we have to deal with people, we are often exposed to a word of contradiction now and then, or to some disagreeable act on the part of another. Occasionally, people indulge in vituperation and contumelious language. The servants, the children, the husband or wife do not always act as they ought. The one who is not master of his passions and knows not how to mortify himself gives way to anger and ill temper under such circumstances. He actually trembles with passion and his heart is full of bitterness. Thus, his inward peace is disturbed. His mind is troubled. The other is master of himself at once. He keeps quiet as if nothing had happened. He rejoices at having an opportunity of overcoming himself. He preserves his peace. The first indulges in his curiosity and allows all freedom to his eyes. He sees some perishable beauty that pleases him. He contemplates it and has a certain joy therein. But how long does it last? No longer than the object which gives rise to it remains in view. And what follows? Nothing but the loss of his inward peace. For a whole day, nay, for weeks and years, he keeps that perishable beauty before his mind. He dreams of it at night and longs to see it again. But these desires of his are frequently doomed to disappointment. Yet he still continues to cherish them, fruitless as he knows they must be. And thus he has nothing from the gratification of his curiosity but discontent, worry, and melancholy. If, like the other, he had mortified his eyes and at once cast them down or turned them elsewhere, he would have avoided all that trouble and have kept his peace of mind. His curiosity impels him to hear, know, and inquire into everything. He is apt to talk of whatever comes into his head, and many a time he says things he is sorry for afterward, while he often hears what fills him with fear and uneasiness. He is like that married man who, out of blasphemous curiosity, disguised himself as a priest and went in the dark to hear his wife's confessional. His only idea was to tease her afterward, for he loved her sincerely. But he had to listen while she told him that she had frequently committed adultery. I leave you to imagine how he was tormented by a secret sadness and grief which he dared tell to no man, and for which there was no remedy. If he had not gratified his godless curiosity, he would have still enjoyed his peace of mind and happiness. The other, who is concerned only about his own affairs and attends only to what he has to do himself, remains ignorant of many things that would indeed please him to hear. But he also is saved from the knowledge of much that would disturb and disquiet him. The first is addicted to the pleasures of the table and is intemperate. Hence, he has to suffer headaches, sickness, evil humors in the blood. He shortens his life and must expect to die before his time. The other, through mortification, keeps within the bounds of moderation, and the little food and drink he takes tastes all the sweeter to him. He has a good appetite after as well as before meals. He is always healthy, cheerful, and in good humor. The first, since a luxurious life necessarily gives rise to a carnal one, seeks for occasions to gratify his impure passions. He thinks he has found joy therein. But what a bitter pills he has to swallow before, during, and after those criminal actions. His sleep is often disturbed. He has no appetite for his food. His sense of shame, his good name, his conscience, all must be sacrificed for the sake of his unruly passions. But he cares little for that. The unclean spirit has blinded his eyes, closed his ears, bewitched his heart, dulled his senses, driven away shame, darkened his understanding. Thus, an uneasy conscience and the fire of hell itself are all that he has gained by his sensual indulgence. And yet, he is not satisfied with the sinful pleasure he enjoys. How can such a man have peace of mind? Does not the other feel far happier in the practice of chastity and mortification? And the same may be said of all other inordinate gratifications. See now from what uneasiness, annoyance, and discomfort he is free, who seems to torment himself by voluntary mortifications. He leads a pleasant, peaceful life on earth, even while he deprives himself of earthly pleasures. He is at peace with himself, with his fellow man, and with his conscience. And lastly, with the God whom he loves above all things. Therefore, my dear brethren, they deceive themselves who think that preachers are too severe when they exhort people from the pulpit to practice mortification and to shun worldly pleasures and entertainments, and look on them as enemies to all enjoyment. No, Christians, such is far from being the case. Never do we seek and desire to procure for you true enjoyment and pleasure, which, according to the law of faith, of reason, and of experience itself, are the only cause of all our unhappiness when we give them loose rein. God hath called us in peace, says St. Paul, and that is the right way to gain true peace. Woefully deceived, then, are they who consider that the vain children of the world who indulge their sensuality are the only happy ones. No Christian, that cannot be. We see the roses outwardly, but the sharp thorns are hidden from us. They spend their days in wealth, says Holy Job of such people. That it is true. They spend their time in eating, drinking, sleeping, amusing themselves, and indulging in sensual pleasures. They have worldly goods in abundance. They gratify their senses. They deny themselves no worldly pleasures. But it is not true that their days are days of happiness. They call out, peace, peace, but all their calling cannot give them real peace or enjoyment. Worst of all, then, is the error of those who imagine that the way of the cross and penance, the service of God, is so hard and bitter that it is intolerable. No, Christians, wrong again. The burden is light, the yoke is sweet, the cross is anointed, as St. Bernard says. It is a sweet suffering, a joyful sadness. Only make a trial of it, if you do not believe what I say. Renounce the deceitful joys of the world. Deny yourself, as Christ wishes us to do. Mortify, therefore, your members, as the Apostle warns you. Mortify your outward senses, your inward desires. And you shall see, says the Lord by the prophet Malachi, the difference between the just and the wicked, and between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. You will see what a great difference there is between the zealous, true, pious Christian, and the tepid man who leads a careless life and has only the name of a Christian. You will experience a great difference there is between the vain, transitory, and merely apparent pleasures that is to be gained by sensual gratification and the true, real peace and enjoyment that comes from mortification. You will agree with St. Augustine, who at first thought it almost an impossibility to give up worldly joys and sensual pleasures, But once he had firmly resolved to serve God faithfully, and had actually commenced to practice mortification, he soon changed his opinion and cried out in joyful tones, "Oh, how delightful it has become to me all at once to be without vain pleasure. Now I am rejoiced at losing what I formerly feared to lose. I shall imitate him then in future." The crosses, troubles, and difficulties that God sends me or will send me, I shall accept with satisfaction and keep in check my outward senses and evil inclinations, mortifying and chastising my flesh. I have sinned. What an immense debt I have already incurred with the divine justice. I can still sin. What powerful means should I not use to avert such a calamity? Christ my Lord was never without the cross. How can I call myself a member of Christ under a thorn-crowned head if I live in pleasures and delights and still expect eternal joys hereafter? Mortification can give me a quiet, peaceful life here below. Why, then, should I avoid it or hesitate to make use of it? And even if I had not all these reasons to urge me to this step, or if they should not be verified in my case, I have at all events the express promise of our Lord, "Your sorrow shall be turned into joy." It should, then, suffice for me to know that my short sorrow and suffering shall be turned into an eternal joy in the glorious resurrection. Help me to keep this resolution, O God. Amen.